It is the Ringer NFL Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network. I'm Kevin Clark, special Super Bowl edition. We did this live with Nora Princiati. The Bucs beat the Chiefs 31-9. Story of the game, Todd Bowles, the Bucs defense, front four, and Patrick Mahomes looking mortal behind a bad Chiefs offensive line. Let's get to it.
This episode of the Ringer NFL Show is presented by State Farm. Create an affordable price just for you when you choose to bundle home and auto. Bundling, just another way to save with the personal price plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
This episode is brought to you by Hyundai. Think about all the stuff you can do now on Sundays after the Super Bowl's over. Adventurous activities. You need a Hyundai to get you there. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped for any adventure with features like available H-Track, all-wheel drive. You can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com.
It is time for a live Ringer NFL Show post-Super Bowl. The Bucs have defeated the Kansas City Chiefs 31-9. Tom Brady wins his seventh Super Bowl. The Bucs win their second as a franchise. Mahomes loses his first game by double digits since 2016 against Iowa State. We learned a lot. I'm joined by Nora Princiati. Nora, what's going on, buddy?
This is crazy, Kevin. This feels like Groundhog Day. It's also very... I think what's sinking in for me is that the number one factor that we discussed all week, which was the banged up Kansas City offensive line against the Bucs pass rush, it was the deciding factor, and yet the outcome was what nobody expected. And that's a funny combination.
The story is absolutely the Bucs pass rush, their ability to get home with four players, in some cases three players. They blitzed on less than 10% of Mahomes' dropbacks, and when they blitzed, that was effective. The four-man rush was effective, the coverage pressure was effective, the blitz was effective, everything worked for the Bucs front. It's the thing that we, and when I say we, I mean probably the entire NFL punditry, we all hand-waved it. Well, obviously this fast Bucs defense against the offensive line that's banged up, and you know they've got replacements there, that'll be fine. Mahomes will solve that, and they couldn't. And we saw the limits of it. And we sat here for 2 weeks and said, okay, it's all about knockout power. Patrick Mahomes is all that matters, all that stuff. And we saw the limits of that tonight. I just think that that was as interesting a game as I've seen in a long time. All right. So there's a lot to get to. Number one is that Shaq Barrett had 8 pressures. It felt like 50. Like we were talking before, we were talking with the producers, and we were talking about that number. And I was ready to believe anything with Shaq Barrett pressure numbers. That goes for the entire team. 23 individual pressures on the Bucs defense against Mahomes. This was an unbelievable performance, not only from the defensive talent, but also Todd Bowles, defensive coordinator. Let's talk about the Bucs defense. First of all, what jumps out, Nora?
What jumps out to me is that they turned Patrick Mahomes into the anti-Patrick Mahomes, essentially.
Yes.
In that he was completely ineffective on third downs when facing the blitz. And now they started the game blitzing like crazy and then pulled off of that later in the game. But at first it was corner blitzes and pressure coming from everywhere and really, really aggressive play calling. And then downfield throws of 15 or more yards. That's usually where Mahomes is fantastic. And by the way, Mahomes did some incredible things. That's what was fascinating about it, is that they turned some of the most incredible playmaking into incompletions. Because I think there is a bit of a misconception with Mahomes about how he plays when he's under pressure. The reason that he is so good against the blitz and so good against heavy pressure teams is because he avoids the pressure. It's not that his play doesn't suffer when there are guys in his face. It's just that it's incredibly hard to get there. So what Tampa Bay was able to do was get there. And within that, it's actually not surprising that his play took a hit, because he has a negative completion percentage below expectation, I guess, would be the terminology there, when there are oncoming rushers that get to him. But they usually don't get there because he can scramble away. But there was just too much with those backup tackles in there. It was just too much to handle. And hats off. I mean, what an incredible defensive game plan. what incredible execution by those players. One thing that I found myself doing is that I would look at the next gen stats dots and be confused for a second. One, because similar color schemes, but two, because the Tampa Bay pass rushers would be on the other side of the offensive line.
There'd be five guys, and you're like, "Where?" It's like turning off sides off in Madden,
right? Like,
where it's just like, "How did they get there? How did they get there? What's going on here?" Yeah, so I think there's a big distinction, and you're right, and it's a great point, because when Mahomes is actually pressured, he is mortal. If you look at the PFF stats during the season, he had 102 rating, I think, against pressure in these playoffs, but over the larger sample size, it was a little different. And tonight, he was at least on his first five throws, no completions against the blitz, including one interception. During the season against the blitz, he had 17 touchdowns and zero interceptions. He was perfect. He had a 70% completion percentage. So it's not about the act of blitzing. It's about getting home when you're blitzing. I think the biggest change, and this is something that was talked about on the broadcast, but and we'll keep talking about it, was the change in philosophy with Todd Bowles with how he treated the safeties. So if you aren't familiar with what happened in the first matchup this year, Tyreek Hill had 13 receptions for 269 yards and three touchdowns. Okay. 189 of those yards came against one safety back. Okay. Single high safety is the terminology. The Bucs changed that. They went with two high safeties on 21 of the first 29 plays, according to Next Gen Stats. And Mahomes failed to complete any pass above 10 yards in that. So they kept everything in front of them. And there were kind of individual performances that we need to whether or not that's a safety or whatever, but we need to talk about the linebackers because they were picked on tonight. And Lavonte David had 13 targets and he gave up eight receptions, but for only 60 yards. And you saw him against Travis Kelce. And we thought that if you were to say Kelce against a linebacker, the Chiefs would have taken that all day. And so some of these individual performances beyond Shaq Barrett and JPP and Vita Vea and a little bit of Sue, they need to be highlighted because this was just, whether it's Devin White, whether it's Lavonte David, at every level of the defense, the Bucs had answers. The final tally, according to ESPN via our friend Mina Kimes, Brady was pressured four times out of 30 dropbacks. Okay. It was a different game. It was a literal different game. And Mahomes was pressured on 29, 56 dropbacks, the most of any quarterback in Super Bowl history. They were playing two different sports tonight. And again, it comes back to this, which is we kept saying only having Mahomes matters, and we learned there's limits to that.
And to just back up for a second, so Elias Sports tweeted this out, the 2020 Chiefs were the first team in Super Bowl history to start two different tackles in the Super Bowl than they did in week one. So that's Remmers and Wiley. Austin Reiter, their center, I think is the only offensive lineman from last year's Super Bowl winning team playing in the same position, who was playing in the same position during this game. So they were as banged up as they possibly could have been. It's just, like to this point, nothing mattered. And then all of a sudden it did. And that's just it. Like that is what is fascinating about sports, right? And that is what is fascinating, actually, I think, about the quarterback matchup. Patrick Mahomes is a more talented player than Tom Brady. And that is still true. But it's just not always how it works out. And sometimes things go from not mattering to mattering. And it's a matter of degree, or it's a matter of right place, right time, or it is some X factor thing that we get to try to figure out. But they had managed remarkably up to this point. And then because of Tampa Bay's personnel, because of their game plan, because of Bowles' play calling, they found a way to exploit a weakness that had been there before for other teams that Kansas City had played in the playoffs. And they just got absolutely everything out of it that they possibly could have. So, you know, I know people were hoping for a shootout and a closer game, but I do think that that's really, really interesting.
So at one point in the fourth quarter, Mahomes was averaging a career high 12 and a half scramble yards per dropback. He was running more than he has really at any point in his career. I'm talking about behind the line of scrimmage. Okay.
Right.
And he was just, you know, there were plays tonight that were superhuman from him. You know, on that fourth down where he's basically parallel to the ground and he threw a perfect pass and it hit a face mask. Okay. Like obviously that would have been quite a feat. The ball was coming out of kind of a weird trajectory. It would have been a strange catch to make, but he was making plays. And I don't think I'm worried right now. I'm not going to make excuses for Patrick Mahomes. He's going to be fine. but I'm worried the narrative is going to get a little bit away from this game. And we're going to talk about the legacy stuff a little bit later. But this was about the pressure. This was about Mike Remmers, unfortunately. I saw a date that it was, you know, the fifth year anniversary of him getting worked by Von Miller. So if the next time Mike Remmers is invited to a Super Bowl, I think he might want to decline. And, you know, Brady had, he was the first player ever to in a Super Bowl to have three touchdowns and complete 80% of his passes. So Brady was the better quarterback tonight, but they were just playing a different game. And, you know, I you start to think about Mahomes and how inevitable everything felt around him, because you saw the stat coming into this game. He was number one in the league when in every metric when trailing, every metric. And Brady was number two, especially in winning percentage. Okay, the main stat when trailing. And I over the past 2 years, I've felt that there was nothing Mahomes couldn't overcome. And now seeing him not overcome this in the biggest stage, it's partly a failure of a lot of people on the roster. But I wonder now going forward, how we'll view Mahomes now that he's not this sort of untouchable Terminator, John Wick thing going on in these fourth quarters. And I don't know. I mean, how will you view Patrick Mahomes after this game? Because my opinion changes like 2%.
Mine changes 1.5%, maybe. I will still view him the same way that I did going into this game. I will maybe pay a little bit more attention to how some of those injury recoveries for the rest of their linemen go. I will hope that they look at what just happened and take it as a lesson for the rest of their future with him to, you know, let's not Seahawks it up here. Like, let's acknowledge that even phenomenal quarterbacks, even top of the league quarterbacks, even maybe best in a generation potential quarterbacks need to be protected. And not giving him that for the duration of his career would be a mistake, even because of his escapability, of his immense talent, of his playmaking ability, of what he, just the fear that he inspires in defensive coordinators. And at least I certainly think that any rational person would believe will continue to do so. It is so cheesy to say, but it is the ultimate team game, and there's no quarterback on earth who doesn't need that. And they can't help, like, it's not Kansas City's fault what happened to their offensive line this year. That's not going to happen every year. But hopefully, if there is, you know, if there are a few little silver linings, they can look at this and go, just because we have this guy, it sets the floor pretty high, but the ceiling is going to depend on what we put around him. And a big piece of that is the protection.
So final numbers, Tom Brady, 21 of 29, 201 yards, 3 touchdowns. Mahomes, 26 of 49, 270 yards, 0 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, a 52 pass rating. So we're going to get back to the quarterbacks. I want to talk about the officiating and the mistakes that the Chiefs made, because those go hand in hand. There were a lot of people at halftime who were talking about the officiating in a less than stellar sense. Darius Leonard said they're making it a little too obvious, which is, I think we all know what he means by that. There's sort of a perception in the league that I don't think we should. I think we can sort of dig into what happened on the field tonight. When you think about how the way this game was officiated, especially in the first half, you start where, Nora?
You start, and okay, so let's start with mainly the DPIs, I think, were bothering people. And the debate is about the chasm between how penalties were called in this game and how they were called over the course of the season. It is harder to make a letter of the law argument that those flags shouldn't have been thrown, that there wasn't arguably some sort of penalty action on those plays, than it is to say that's unfair because teams adjust based on how these things are being called throughout the regular season, throughout the postseason. They coaching staffs talk about it. It's part of game planning. Like, it's absolutely a thing. And they were just throwing flags at times when they wouldn't have, for the most part, they were not throwing flags with that level of contact throughout the season.
Right.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and that was the point that was made a couple of times on Twitter by former officials or current officials, is that I think the Sunday Football analyst said that it's unusual to see the Super Bowl called tighter than the regular season. I mean, that just doesn't happen. And one of the interesting things I thought was there was a story last year by some of the Niners beat writers, including Nick Wagner, about how the Niners thought that they were going to get some of these calls because the Chiefs defense led the NFL in defensive holding calls last year. And they thought that there was a huge, I guess, competitive advantage in getting those calls in last year's Super Bowl, and they never came. And so now we see maybe they were watching for that this year because they weren't called last year. Maybe the Chiefs are just a more aggressive defense. And so I think that to me was interesting, that I think the Chiefs having gotten it, maybe not having gotten officiated tight last year, maybe tried more aggressive thing. But listen, there were some borderline calls here, and especially in the passing game, and they happened to go against the Chiefs sometimes. The Tyrann Mathieu interception was borderline, I think. The one that was called back.
The holding.
I think that there were some the holding, yeah. I think there were some judgment calls that went against the Chiefs. I thought that the Brady Mathieu kind of spat that ended in the Mathieu flag was very strange to me.
It's like, but Kevin, do you watch The Crown?
I do.
I wish I could come up with the exact right scene that I'm thinking of, but you know how sometimes when someone of lower rank doesn't follow the protocol in how they're addressing royalty in The Crown, and you see them process that moment of like, you didn't call me your majesty. Like, you're not supposed to be doing this. That's what Tom Brady in that moment made me think of. So he was like, are you finger wagging at me?
Yes. I mean, it was, there were so many, but it goes, for me, it goes back to the fact that the Chiefs were just overwhelmed in this game.
Yep.
Whether that's the Bucs getting home with four players, whether that's just the skill guys running over the Chiefs defensive backs, there was just so much that was just, this was just dominance. And you look at the stats here, first of all, 95 yards in the first half of penalties, the most with any Chiefs game with Andy Reid. I believe the second quarter they had the most penalty yards in the history of the Super Bowl. I mean, they were just making mistakes, and those compounded, and I don't think they were ready to play, and they were shooting themselves in the foot. The offsides on the field goal there's just no excuse for that. This team was just not prepared. And, you know, we can extend that to the entire coaching staff. I think there was a little bit of Steve Spagnuolo owns Tom Brady narrative earlier in this week that turned out to not be true. And I just think that's the Bucks outcoached the Chiefs today. And I don't know how you can make any other argument. And that's not just scheme. And that's not just knowing how to get to Mahomes and all that stuff with the backup tackles. A lot of that's just preparation. And I thought the defensive penalties were just shocking in the first half.
And the other piece of that kind of goes hand in hand is the clock management, because
yes,
Tampa Bay should not have had the opportunity to score the touchdown before halftime that they did, but because the Chiefs didn't take time off the board and opportunities when they could have, they were able to do that. And now they got stopped at the goal line earlier in the game. So that took away a touchdown that maybe could have contributed to an even more lopsided final score. But they gifted Tampa Bay a touchdown.
Just because you wrestle alligators for a living doesn't mean you should have the skin of one. Say goodbye to dry and cracked skin with Old Spice Super Hydration Body Wash with vitamin B3. Made for 24/7 renewing moisturization with daily use. With scents of vanilla and shea, people will think you've taken up candle making as one of your hobbies. And there is nothing wrong with that. Old Spice Super Hydration Body Wash. Shop Old Spice now.
Let's get to our winners and losers here. First winner, Nora.
So my first winner is, forget what order we said these in, but Todd Bowles. And for all the reasons that we just discussed, right? But it kind of makes me think about hiring cycles. It makes me think about whether or not that guy maybe deserves another chance. And sometimes I hesitate to make points like this, because being a coordinator is a different job than being a head coach. And we've seen Todd Bowles in a head coaching role, but he just did a really impressive job and he has a pretty good resume. So at this point, if all we have to go on is recent performance and the ability to scheme to your personnel, to game plan for a really big game, and to totally dominate in that moment, then I don't know who else we should be talking about. I mean, like, I think it's a bad look and a bad outcome yep. that guys like Eric Bieniemy didn't get jobs or didn't get at least more significant run looking at jobs. But I don't know that Bowles was really talked about in the same kind of way. And maybe he deserves to be.
I agree. I think this was a resume building performance for a guy who already had an incredible resume. And we've already talked about the how they changed to too high and all that stuff. And they took advantage, and they knew how to take advantage. And again, a lot of that was talent, but also they were able to plug the run gaps. You thought early on that Mahomes was going to be able to scramble for 11 yards every time. And they were able to at least plug those gaps to the point where those lanes disappeared as the game went on. I was impressed by that. I think everybody, you know, we had a reader question we're not actually going to get to, but the question was, what coordinator were you most impressed with, Byron Leftwich or Todd Bowles? And listen, the answer could be both. I mean, Brady changed his style a little bit. I saw that he was getting rid of the ball quicker than he had at any point this year. But Todd Bowles was just awesome. And we're going to talk about this for a long, long time. And I think there's probably an element of wishing we could have seen Mahomes behind a healthy offensive line, but yeah, listen, they've been out with Mitchell Schwartz almost all year. They've been out, Duvernay-Tardif opted out. Like, this is not, that's football sometimes. And so being adaptable and all that stuff. And also, we can't sit here and say nothing except Mahomes matters and then say, oh, I wish Mahomes had been behind a healthy offensive line. Todd Bowles knew how to take advantage of it. JPP and Vita Vea and Shaq Barrett and all those guys had the talent to do it. I mean, just this was, we're going to be talking about this defensive performance for a long, long time. All right. Second
hold
winner.
Hold on. We got to acknowledge this. Vita Vea, edge rusher. Like, if the Chiefs had won this game and done a bunch of cool shit, we would be giving Andy Reid a ton of credit for doing cool shit because he does it all the time. Yes. Todd Bowles did some cool shit. That's all I wanted to say.
I agree with that. All right. Our second winner, it's Rob Gronkowski.
Gronk. We've talked about this.
We joked about it. We joked about it for 20 weeks that Gronk was just going to plod along for 20 weeks. And then, I'm in the Super Bowl. Time to win. Time to win the Super Bowl. It's not a joke.
It's literally the meme. It's like Gronk when it's time to win the Super Bowl. Comes alive.
Yes. Yes. So the final numbers for Gronk. 2 touchdowns, 6 receptions, 67 yards. Obviously, in the first half, we knew it was going to be a pretty dominant performance from him. I believe he was the Bucs' leading receiver. Were you around Gronk a lot? You were around Brady a lot. When you heard last summer that Gronk was coming back, what did you expect, and how did his performance this year change your expectations at all, I guess?
I'm so glad you just asked this and phrased it that way, because when I heard that Gronk was joining Brady in Tampa, it's not that I wasn't excited to see it, but it gave me a knot in my stomach because I watched right. that guy basically cry over how much his body hurt from playing football and how yes. the dispiriting elements of the physical slog that he was going through were weighing on him both physically and mentally at a certain point. And he was not a happy camper. And then he retired and it just seemed like his body changed and he could just live a normal life. And a happy Gronk is the Gronk that everybody wants to see. I actually think that some of the sort of frat star lifestyle stuff with him is overblown, and that's his own doing, but he's a sweet, smart guy in a lot of ways that I don't think people really understand. And football did a number on him, at least at that point when it was time for him to go. And so he comes back and it's not my life and he's an adult, but it scared the crap out of me because I don't think anybody really wanted to see him in that place again. And then watching him today, the thing that I kept thinking about is, holy crap, this guy has never been this healthy at this point in the year.
Yeah.
Ever. And that's a matter of...
And even that Rams catch was completely against everything that he had been doing for a couple... Like, he was not supposed to make that Super Bowl Rams catch.
All he had left. Like, that was it. He just needed to do that one thing in that moment, and he did it, and they won the Super Bowl, but that was all he had to give. I don't think this was all he had to give, you know? And I, not to say that he should have done more in this game. He had an incredible game. He tied the Bucs franchise postseason touchdown record in the first half. And that probably says more about the Bucs than Gronk, but he had a great game. I think he's because of the other skill position players that they have, because it's a little bit of a looser environment where you can take veterans days off, maybe because he's in sunny, warm Tampa, whatever. It was better for him. I don't know what the factors were.
A weather take. Yeah,
I hate that.
I'm in agreement with
you.
I
say that through gritted teeth. Maybe the weather helped him.
And I think that I'm with you, and obviously you know him better than I do, but I'm in agreement in that. I don't think that the national perception of Gronk factors in how beaten up he was for years. And the fact that when he retired, he'd been talked about as someone who was going to retire 2 years prior. I mean, there's a reason that when he was going to be traded to the Lions, he was like, I'm done. Deal me out. Right. And that was, 3 years ago. Yeah. And so I think for him to come back like this and take a year off and to play with Brady and to actually have fun playing football. And that's not a Patriots take. That's more of just a his body was breaking down take. I thought it was amazing. And I just think that this is, there's a reason Tom Brady came to Tampa. And you see this defense, you see these skill guys, you see Gronk. I mean, all the pieces fit. And I think that was cool to see. All right, Jason Light, Bucks GM, definite winner.
Definite winner, and kind of a good segue from Gronk, because okay, so they got touchdowns from Gronk, from playoff Lenny. I'm not a huge fan of the Antonio Brown acquisition, but he was an acquisition. You start looking at the contributors in this game, and there are two paths, right? There were a lot of those defensive pieces that he was involved in drafting, and then what put them over the edge were those offseason moves. And the thing that it made me think about sort of as a takeaway from this, and it's something that actually you've said a few times. We may overestimate the length of windows, of Super Bowl windows in football.
Yes.
And this is a really good example of going for it while you can and of striking while the iron is hot. He did an incredible job. I mean, he just took swings that all connected, right? So I think you give a lot of process credit in terms of clearly they're looking for things in their draft picks that are paying off. But I also think you give him credit for going for it, because there is no way that when he signed Tom Brady, he knew for certain that he wasn't going to fall off the proverbial cliff. But I think we should commend ring chasing, honestly. I think that's what it comes down to. I mean, Jason Light just went for it and it all worked out. So I thought that his work was very much on display in this game.
So I'm in total agreement with you. I think that, as we talked about 2 weeks ago, they called it Operation Shoeless Joe, because if you build it, Brady will come. And the plan worked. And I think that you see now, I mean, let's not re-legislate the Jameis Winston era, but to come in, for Tom Brady to come in to Bruce Arians' offense and have this much success in an offense that lends itself to mistakes very often early in a player's tenure. This is something we talked about with Carson Palmer this week, where Palmer made all those mistakes early on with turnovers. Andrew Luck did. Ben Roethlisberger did. Jameis certainly did. And for him to take the risk, for Brady to take the risk out of Arians' offense is actually amazing to me. And it shows you, and I know this is going to sound so simplistic, but it shows you why you try to get Tom Brady, is because he's the guy. There's like four guys who can do that, right? One of them was on the Chiefs tonight, but there's so many guys who would come in and take a risky offense and make risky throws. And Brady doesn't do that. And that's what's amazing to me. And let's make our transition now to our first loser. It's the Chiefs coaching staff.
Yeah. Well, and we touched on that with the clock management. I assign penalties a certain degree to coaching. and just not a lot of...
Well, I want to address that. I just want to address one thing on that, okay? So according to ESPN, the Carl Cheffers crew gave out the most penalties in the NFL this year, 16 per game, okay? And I do think you have to give out... I think you have to scout the referees sometimes, okay? And know if they're going to throw those borderline flags. This is something, and I don't want to make this a Patriots point, but this is something the Patriots do all the time, right? That when I talk to Mike Pereira, I talk to any of these guys who have been in the room with Bill Belichick, their whole thing is like asking a million questions about how they're going to call a certain thing and then telling their team about it. And I've talked to players about it who say the same thing, where they'll say, hey, this back judge, he will call pass interference over and over and over again. They know this stuff. So if you knew that they were going to be a little tighter on this stuff, I do think you at least have to make that point. Again, I think the officiating was kind of bad in this game, but I do think that's a point you have to make to your players.
Officiating's bad a lot of the time. Like, sorry, yes. I don't mean to ref hate. They have a tough job, but officiating is bad a lot of the time, and it's an eventuality that teams inconsistent. Prepare for. Well, right, but then yes. You also have so the two DPIs before the Antonio Brown touchdown. The first one was on Breland, and then the one that set up the touchdown, I think, was on Tyrann Mathieu. Is that right? Let's just go with it. I'm pretty sure that's right.
Yes, 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 yes.
There's that to me is also about coaching, right? Because penalties have a way of spiraling because you get frustrated. Right. And so then rather than go, okay, they're calling this kind of tight, I got to back off. You keep playing too aggressively because you're tensing up and you're sensing, yep. Oh God, we're going to lose. This is horrible. What am I going to do? That's when you need a coach. That's when coaching matters. So,
right.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you look at a play and go, okay, it's kind of on the player. Like, he really mugged the guy. But to a degree, coaching shares those screw-ups.
So, Marlon Humphrey, the great Ravens defensive back, had...
Analyst Humph!
What I think is probably the most succinct way to put the Chiefs night in perspective, which is, quote, where was this Kansas City team when we played them the last 3 years? And I think that there's a lot of AFC players who are asking that question because this was a steamroller for the past 3 years. And Tom Brady is the only quarterback who's beaten Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs. That remains true. But I think that there's just something where a lot of teams are probably looking at this and saying, where was that team? Where was that mistake prone team? All right. Next loser. We already talked about it, but it's Mike Remmers. He will get the brunt of the criticism here. I don't think anyone could have stepped in cold like that who's available. I mean, this is a tough time for everybody, okay? Like, this is it is a tough job to come in. And by the way, there's no guarantee that a normal Chiefs offensive line could have handled this really fast defense. Remember, we talked to Chase Daniel this week on the podcast. He said it's one of the fastest defenses he's ever seen. And so I think that there's, you know, he'll probably get some criticism that he doesn't deserve, but he deserves a lot of criticism because he played really, really badly tonight. And there was that one call. Romo was like, it's kind of a soft call. And they showed the replay. He had the defensive end in like a UFC rear naked choke or something. Like, this was some of those calls.
Can't
be
doing that.
Were interesting. But Mike Remmers, tough night. Got owned by Von Miller 5 years ago. Gets owned by the Bucks defensive line tonight. Again, next time someone asks you to play in a Super Bowl, say, I'm good.
I'm not piling on here. I feel bad for Mike Remmers. Don't check Twitter, Mike Remmers. That's just general life
advice.
Don't
check. Well, I would say that's for anybody, including us. Twitter had to come off my phone this weekend, just sort of incidentally. I had a technical problem, and I've never felt happier. This is great. Well, let's get to the viewer. We have viewer questions here. I call them reader questions. We have them viewer questions, or actually listener questions. All right. This is from Daniel. Does this game mean that Mahomes will never pass Brady on the all-time list?
I'm going to say something that I know to be wrong. Yes.
I love it. The best type of preface.
I don't know what the future holds, man. I kind of feel like...
Oh, wow.
I kind of feel like 20 years from now, we're going to be like, Patrick Mahomes couldn't beat Tom Brady.
So we're going to talk about this forever. By the way, there is no guarantee these two teams don't play next year.
Or the year after
Brady's going to come back the next 10 years. for the entirety of Patrick Mahomes' 10-year extension, Tom Brady will
be there. Stopping
right?
at 10? Yeah.
Playing till he's 53. So I think that this will be a legacy shaper. I think we're always going to consider this in the context of Mahomes' career, whether that's fair or unfair. I do think there will be some charitable interpretations in a few years, and hopefully all of the media can remember what kind of offensive line he was playing behind. But I think this kind of thing matters. And I think that when we have this debate, this will be the first thing people talk about. And again, a lot of that has to do with how many Super Bowls Mahomes wins. I'm of the theory, listen, Mahomes, it's going to be really freaking hard for Mahomes to win 7 Super Bowls.
Right.
Like, this is insane. I mean, this is, it reminds me a little bit of like the Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus debate, where it's like, oh, Tiger is definitely going to pass Jack. And it's like, wait a second. It's really hard. Like, the sport keeps changing. The sport keeps getting more competitive. Quarterbacks keep getting better. He's not going to be paired with, you know, an incredible roster like the first Patriots dynasty. Like, the sport keeps changing. And I don't think that I think it's kind of reductive to just sit here and say, oh, well, when Mahomes wins 7, we'll look back and compare it to Brady 7. Wait a second. That's pretty... We're jumping to a lot of conclusions here about Mahomes. Mahomes can be the best player we've ever seen, but he doesn't have to win 7 Super Bowls for that conversation. I mean, people say that Aaron Rodgers is the most talented quarterback they've ever seen, and he's played in and won 1 Super Bowl. So I just think the debates, I think it's hard right now to sit here and say that this will shape a debate X, Y, and Z, but I do think when we're comparing these two players, it's the first thing we'll talk about.
I just realized something horrible. There's going to be a point.
What's that?
There's going to be a point in our lives where we're going to be like, you young kids don't understand.
Yeah.
Tom Brady always beat Patrick Mahomes. Oh, I hate that future. Wow. This is a bummer.
Get used to it.
All right.
Get used to it.
That's a good question.
I'm in my 30s. You make me feel old. And now you're imagining a situation where you're hosting a pod in 8 years with someone younger than you who's just talking about Trevor Lawrence.
This is horrible.
And you're like, you should have seen Mahomes in 2018.
Oh,
yeah, no, welcome.
Here.
Welcome to the club. Welcome to the club. All right. Next reader question or listener question, we're just going to keep doing this, is related. It's from MJ. There's lots of goat talk about Brady versus Mahomes for the game. What about Gronkowski versus Kelsey and that conversation? Great question, because there was a lot of, can Kelsey bridge the gap? Can he, is there a chance with Mahomes that Kelsey can be the all-time great? And I think, similar to the Brady conversation, a little bit of a door closing here tonight.
Okay, so another question that I'm thrilled to have. I'm going to dunk on myself a little bit here. So I wrote about Gronk and Kelsey and the tight end position earlier in the week, and it was a story that I was really interested in doing once we had the Super Bowl matchup, and like thinking if that's a Super Bowl matchup, I want to look into that. And one of the reasons that I wanted to do it is because I was thinking about both of those players as kind of as prototypes for exactly what you want at sort of two different points along the evolutionary track of that position. And then I started talking to people, and I had a couple conversations with smart NFL personnel people, and they were like, yeah, so you're thinking about this the wrong way. They are part of the same evolutionary branch, basically. And the speciation event happens right around the time that Gronk is drafted in 2010. And that's when you have a lot of these really good pass-catching tight ends starting to be used in different ways, going out of the slot, splitting out wide, just not only the traditional wide tight end position that had been the staple for a really long time. And a couple years after that is when Kelsey enters the league. But really what's happening there is that Gronk, Jimmy Graham, those guys are succeeding. And the rest of the league is going, oh, I want a piece of that. Like, I want to do that too. That looks like it's really working. And it's working schematically, because teams like the Patriots realized that you can't, like, Wes Welker is not the only guy that you can put in the slot. You can put a bigger body there, and then all of a sudden you're working the middle of the field with a guy who barely needs to separate to be able to beat a guy one-on-one because he's just bigger. And as long as he's fast enough, like Gronk obviously was and maybe is, that was going to be the ultimate mismatch opportunity. Then the Kelseys start getting drafted. They start getting paid more. They start just entering the league and having job opportunities. They're more athletic, so they can contribute on special teams, which means teams carry more of them on their rosters. And there's just all this stuff that starts happening that starts encouraging better and better athletes to play tight end. So really what's happening is that they're part of the same wave. It's just that Gronk is truly the once in a generation athlete. Gronk still, I think the thing that I had wrong is that maybe like however many years ago, Gronk is absolutely who you would have wanted. And then maybe now you want the more pure, like big wide receiver, pass catching guy like Kelsey. No, Gronk, you still want Gronk because Gronk can do everything, right? Like he can bulldoze people and he can split out wide and do that too. Like you still want Gronk. It's just that, I mean, Travis Kelce's don't grow on trees, but Gronk's just really don't grow on trees. You're just not going to get that. But what you do have is a lot more really good athletes that can play the position, and their pass catching ability is being valued more than their blocking ability, but they are taking over the league because they exist. It's the supply chain that's influencing how the teams are using them. It's not that the Gronk generation was somehow distinct. It's just that there are so few of those guys that teams have been like, well, we'll have the more pass catching skill set, but we need somebody who can do this. So to me, Gronk is the GOAT tight end. I don't think that Travis Kelce has as complete a skill set and is as much of a mismatch nightmare ultimately as Gronk was at his peak. But they're both incredibly good players at a position that I do believe we're seeing take on greater and greater importance. Their pay is starting to catch up to wide receivers. Again, yes. Teams are carrying more of them on their rosters. And I think, you know, last year was the first time in a long time that one didn't go in the first round of the draft. And Cole Kmet was the first guy that was taken. Really curious to see what happens this year because those guys are super, super valuable to teams.
I agree. And I also think that I'm going to spend the entire offseason wondering how they're the same age. That's the
mind-blowing thing. That's the crazy part, right? Is that they're like...
They're both 31 years old. Very different 31-year-olds is what is my take on that. I think the tight end thing, and also having the ability... Let's flip this a second, because we gave props to Lavonte David earlier to have 8 receptions on 13 targets for only 60 yards. But the ability to cover those guys from a linebacker position and not have to change your entire defense around is amazing. And I think that, you know, we've seen Belichick, Patriots alert. We've seen Belichick put cornerbacks on, you know, like Jimmy Graham and stuff. Like famously, I think it was a key. He put a corner on Jimmy Graham for an entire game and held him catchless for the first time. And basically Jimmy Graham's historic season in 2013, I want to say. It may have been Tlaib, but I just think that there's interesting defensive adjustments for that. And Todd Bowles knew how to do it. He kept everything in front of him, and Kelce got bottled up. All right, next question, last question is from Jakey. With all of the Bucs' offensive touchdowns coming from acquired talent and not drafted players, what does this game say about team building in the NFL going forward?
So it's exactly what we talked about when we were talking about Jason Light, right? It's go for it. Like, yeah. Carpe window.
So the
classics aren't my forte.
I think we have to look at both these things, right? At both the draft and free agency. Because if you can get a JPP for relatively cheap, if you can get a Shaq Barrett who's going to be a free agent soon, but who came relatively cheap before the franchise tag, and ended up being, I think he had the most sacks the last 2 years and most pressures the last 2 years.
Yeah, they have not overpaid for Shaq Barrett.
If you can get a Tom Brady in free agency, I recommend you get a Tom Brady in free agency. That's my professional GM advice. A little advice from me to you if you're a GM right now.
We should start a consulting firm.
But I should.
Our recommendation to every team is to sign Tom Brady.
Yeah. But I also think that when you think about, you know, what some the offensive line, some of the skill guys, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, I mean, like there are guys who are just not going to become free agents. And I think that there you have to have both, and you have to understand the cap, and you have to understand what your team needs. And, you know, I spent a long time talking to Brett Veach, 8 days ago, And he said something that was so fascinating to me. Maybe it's an obvious point, but I thought about it tonight where he said, I said, how do you view the next 10 years? You have Mahomes and Andy Reid locked in. And he said, we have the ultimate in stability for a franchise, and we have the cornerstones for success. But the beauty of this game is that that's not enough. And when I was watching this game tonight, I kept thinking about the second part of that quote. The beauty of this game is that that's not enough. And I wonder, first of all, I bet he wishes it was enough. But I also think that you saw, I said this on Thursday's episode, this was going to be a depth Super Bowl. And I picked the Chiefs to win because of Mahomes. But I also, when I looked at the rosters tonight and I looked at the stats, I feel bad not having seen this coming. And I feel bad that we didn't give enough. We didn't think enough about what was going to happen when the Bucs got four home against Patrick Mahomes. So the answer is it's always going to be a mixture. And it didn't used to be, like the Ted Thompson Packers were able, with the exception of Charles Woodson, to go out there. I remember the 2014 or 2015 Packers that the Dez caught it team. I think they only had two guys that weren't drafted and weren't drafted by the Packers. And I think that the sort of in-house drafting style and just keeping everything in house is working its way out because of the way that the cap has exploded, because it's just really easy to sign a guy to a $10 million deal or whatever. I think Frank Clark was the highest paid player ever last year to win a Super Bowl. So the Chiefs understand how you can carry those sort of numbers. But with the cap being, I saw a report today, $180 million something next year. The free agent thing might dissipate a little bit. But I always think you're going to be able to find values in the open market, especially, and this is a big point I want to make, there's going to be middle-class players available on the free agent market this year because teams get capped out, whether that's the Saints or whomever. They're going to have to make, some of these teams are going to be $60, $70 million over the cap, although the Saints freed up $24 million in cap space with Drew Brees yesterday. But there's going to be guys who become available because of the cap crunch, and those guys are going to determine in large part who competes and who doesn't next year for the teams on the fringes. So, to answer your question, how does it change? I don't think any team is going to say I'm changing my entire philosophy based on this game. But what I will say, it's kind of a lesson for everybody to blend the two together.
The Bucks, by the way, are under the cap. I mean, they're losing or Barrett's hitting free agency, so some pass rush obviously is expensive, and they just saw how important it is to them, so they probably will end up spending a little bit there, and cap space can get used up quickly. But they're not in a terrible position by any means, and that is including Brady's still under contract, so yeah, they've got resources to play around with. Like, they're in no way super hamstrung by this, and to your point, there will be bargains in terms of veterans that are available. I mean, some of those guys might end up weighing sitting out a year if the money's not there for them, if it's a certain type of player who's made a certain amount of money and doesn't want to take a beating for a year to earn a veteran's minimum salary. But somewhere between that guy and the guy that teams are still going to go all out for with whatever cap space they do have, yeah, there's going to be deals, and smart teams are going to find them. And smart teams may even be able to get those guys on contracts that are longer term if they have the cap space to do it in the short term. And then those guys are bargains down the road. So every situation that presents itself ends up being an opportunity for somebody. And Tampa is not in a position where they're going to be unable to try to use that.
Totally agree. I think Tampa's going to be good next year. I think the Chiefs are going to be good next year. And again, all of this legacy talk is very funny to me as far as Brady closing the door or whatever, because there's no rule against them playing in this game next year. Okay. And you look at the deep passing numbers and all this stuff, I just don't see much of a decline in Tom Brady. The wheels are not falling off here. There's a lot of Super Bowls Tom Brady's won where I've said, okay, this might be the last one. Like, he's kind of declining, whatever. And a lot of that apparently was just system and skill guys around him.
There was also, so you just reminded me of a point that I wanted to make about light and just the team building there. The defense, which is more the side where I think you look at those guys and there's so many young guys that they drafted, particularly, like, we've talked a bunch about that 2019 draft. Just, they went so heavy on coverage players, so heavy on fast players. And it philosophically just seems like something that really has paid off for them. Those guys when they are in a position where the quarterback's going to throw 30 interceptions a season, they don't get to be themselves. They're constantly right. playing in crappy situations. So it's not as if, you know, these things are not unrelated. So you get a quarterback like Brady who can operate the Arians offense and not make a bunch of mistakes. Well, guess what? Your young defense, it's better this year because it's young and it's learning and it's getting more experience. It's also better this year because it's not being put immediately back out on the field left and right a couple times a game. So I think it's giving an unreasonable amount of credit, not to Jason Light, not to the Bucks, but just to anyone, because no one is like divinely inspired to make every football roster building move correctly. At least I don't think so. But those two things happened to go together in a way that worked really perfectly.
All right. So next year's odds, according to FanDuel, the Chiefs are +490. The Bucks are tied for second best with +1100. The Packers are also +1100. The Bills are also +1100. So in between the Packers and the Bucks, this Super Bowl matchup is kind of a favored next year. So we'll see what happens. I'm intrigued. As you said, as you started this podcast with, we can't predict the future, but I can predict that I think Brady probably is going to have the, I think it's gonna be really hard for Mahomes to get the GOAT label now. That's my hot take.
I agree with that.
Just because this will be the first thing we talk about when he would have to win more Super Bowls in a more dominant fashion.
I agree with that. I feel like Brady has it locked up. I feel like he's had it locked up, but this is just where I'm trying to visualize people who didn't watch his entire career. I mean, I didn't really watch his entire career, but enough of it where it's clear to me that he has accomplished more than.
I'm a millennial. I'm not in Gen Z. So I saw the whole career.
I don't want to do this. It's clear to me that he has a larger need for a larger trophy room at home than anybody else. But if you don't see it and Mahomes wins, I don't know, 5, and he does have physical skills that Tom Brady never has and never will possess, then I don't know. I don't know how people's minds work. Maybe it starts to creep in, but I am inclined to agree with you that this does actually a very significant amount just because it's math, right? Like, he could have had back to back, which Brady did.
Yep.
And it's one fewer for Brady, and Mahomes is one closer to Brady's total. The Chiefs are one closer to the Patriots total. Like, it's really significant, and that stuff's not going to go away. But I don't know. I don't know how people's minds work.
All right, Brady's your MVP. Anything else?
This was fun. This was really fun.
I agree with you. This was fun. We'll be back on Friday. We'll record on Thursday. Ryan Chazier will join us. House, Verno, and Warren Sharp will be with us early in the week to recap all of this. And I do want to talk briefly about Chris Wessling, our friend who passed away over the weekend on Saturday. His wife announced, and I just want to say he was an amazing person, and all the tributes that you've heard on Twitter elsewhere are true. And you know, I think on Saturday night, if you were in the NFL community, you were texting about Chris and you were talking to people about Chris and their memories of Chris. And I just think that he's one of the very few people in our industry who were exactly what they came across as on, you know, just as far as genuine passion for the game. Genuine passion for life, his family, all of that stuff. And he was an amazing person. And I was thinking about all the times that I ran into Chris at events and on the road, and he just made every situation brighter, every room brighter. And we love Chris Wessling, and we're gonna miss him. And we are thinking about his family. So all right, this has been a live Ringer NFL show on the Ringer Podcast Network. We'll see you later this week.
Thanks, guys.